one key. Let me greet you all in this second term of our sixth administration. I think everyone is aware that we were in a recess in the last few weeks. But definitely this is our second term. Amongst us today, we have a new member, Honorable Sharon van Schalkwyk. She has replaced Honorable Robert Mashego from the ANC, who was serving in other committees. So she will be with us. She is a permanent member in this committee. So she's a new member. Welcome, Honorable Member. I think in all of us, the majority here, August is a historic, significant month, especially us as women. I don't think when those women marched, they ever thought that we'd be having a woman who is a minister today. I don't think they ever thought that we'd be having women that would be members of parliament today. So I think as women across all political parties, we need to appreciate what those women of 1956 stood for. Or they stood for all of us, and we today, we're riding on those shoulders, on that foundation, when they stood up to show that the place of the woman is not only in the kitchen, it's also here on the corridors of the parliament. So I just wanted to highlight that. But we will then hand over to the team of Auditor General. Okay. In fact, they will introduce themselves when they present to us. Remember, Honourable Members, we were supposed to meet with them when we came in, but they had to schedule their meeting because of other commitments. So they are here today to inform us about what should we expect, what should we do, what is Auditor General doing for us. But before we hand over to the team, let's allow Ms. Nola Jabodana, our committee secretary, to present the apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to honourable members, honourable minister, and the colleagues at large. The Chairperson has already said, my name is Nola Jabodana, the committee secretary, PC on PWI. I would like to read the apologies and they're as follows. The Honourable Shabalala will not be able to join us today due to ill health. The Honourable Graham also has a doctor's appointment to attend to, so she will unfortunately not be joining us today. Honourable Numalo will only be flying in later from KZN due to unforeseen circumstances, so he's unable to also join us. And then Honourable Kobane is just running a bit, she's a bit delayed. She'll be joining the meeting at a later stage. Thank you, Chairperson. And we'd like to apologize for the noise. We're trying to sort it out. We're trying to establish what exactly is the cause of the noise, and we are, Ms. Charlene is trying to sort the mess out. Thank you, Chair. All right, I've just gotten feedback that the noise is not coming from this building, it's coming from the outside. However, they've reported it to the authorities and they're trying to sort it out. Thank you, Honorable Members.
We'll hand over to Solicitor General Tim to present now.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Makoboi Griffiths. I am the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the Auditor General. I'm based here in Cape Town. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Mthokozisi Sibisi. I'm the Deputy Business Executive from the Auditor General.
Good morning, members. My name is Tinsolo Masia. I am the Senior Audit Manager for the Public Works Portfolio Audit.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Minister, and Honorable Members. Thank you very much for the opportunity for sharing this session with us. As a way of introduction and background and the purpose of this session or presentation, I'm going to take you through the first part of the presentation, and together with my colleague, I think the second half of the presentation, Tinsolo will take us through that. But I think the most important part is just to clarify or talk about the purpose of today's session and what it is that we're trying to seek from or achieve from this session of discussion. Firstly, just to make sure that we are all on the same page. One, the purpose of today's session is to give you a high-level background of what we are about. We are cognizant of the fact that members might be coming from different backgrounds. We will try and not be as technical as possible, but what we are also going to try and do in the process of presenting on doing what we are going to be doing this morning is to try and give clarity and examples in certain cases where we can. But what we are not going to touch on or focus on is to talk about the processes that are currently underway. For example, the purpose of today is not to talk about the audit outcomes or the audit process itself, all the specifics relating to the department, but to give an overview and overarching principles that we are following when we are doing an audit. So I thought that is just important to try and clarify that. as a starting point, that slide that I want to spend some time talking to is the reputation promise slide. I'm sure the Honourable Members would have seen this slide many times in our presentations where we do the presentations from the Auditor General. Basically, in the slide, that's where we highlight and talk about what it is that we do as Auditor General, what it is that we are trying to achieve. Basically saying, as the Auditor General, we've got a constitutional mandate that we exist because of that constitutional mandate. What we're trying to do is to strengthen the country's democracy. In doing that, there are three things that we focus on. We're trying to enable oversight. We're in the process trying to make sure that there is accountability in the public sector space. And governance. Obviously, we do that through the audit process, and we're hoping that in doing that, we'll be able to build public confidence in the environment. So that's the reputation promise. That's what we exist to do and achieve as the Auditor General. I've mentioned from the reputation promise that we draw our mandate from the Constitution. So the next slide is just to highlight the specifics and talk about what maybe the specific sections that give us those powers from the Constitution. That's why we call Chapter 9 Institution, because our mandate comes from that Section 188 of the Constitution, which requires us that we must, and it's not a may, we must audit the accounts and financial statements and financial management and all those good things of the department. So that's where our mandate comes from. But then the enabling legislation that tries to expand further is then the Section 20 of our Public Audit Act, which tries to elaborate further on the specific things that we need to do as the Auditor General. Basically, there are three main things that we do when we audit, that we exist to do. One is to audit the financial statements or the accounts of the departments, the entities in the public sector space, with the purpose of, one, expressing an opinion on the fairness of what is presented in those financial statements. In doing that, the main thing that we look at, we just try and make sure that there aren't any material misstatement or significant errors. If there are significant errors, then the opinion that will come from the fair press or the financial statements will be a modified one. So that's what we need to do from a legislation perspective. We need to issue an opinion or a conclusion on the status of the financial statements or credibility or quality thereof. So that's one. And the second aspect that we must do from a legislation point of view is to check compliance with laws and regulations. So again, in there, we need to express an opinion or a conclusion, at least from a legislation perspective. That's what we need to do, to issue an opinion or a conclusion. But at this stage, we are not issuing an opinion, but all the non-compliance issues that we pick up in the environment, that's what we report in the audit report as part of the audit report outcome. The third area that we look at that we must also report on is the audit of performance information. But basically, they're trying to make sure that that which the entities in government have said they want to achieve and included in their annual plans, we say throughout the year, whether that was done, that which they wanted to do, to say whether that was done, and that we audit from APRs, the annual performance report, and then from there issue any findings, if there are any findings. So I thought, let me just spend some time from that, and you'll see as we go on with the presentation that we have assumed that we are all on the same page and the members do not know much about what we do. So we've pitched the presentation at that level. So that's what we are trying to do. And the members that know what we are doing will forgive us if we're telling you about the things that you know. But we thought it's important that we cover even the basics from what we do. And then, sir, just the last part, those are the top three things that we must do in terms of the legislation. But then the Section 5 of the PAA deals with all other discretionary audits. In discretionary audits, that's where we've got our performance audits. That's where we do investigations. In some instances, that's where we would do as well the agreed upon procedures. When we are requested to do certain things that are specific, those things will fall under Section 5 of the legislation. So having said that, what we've then decided to do is just to clarify things that we do and things that do not fall within the scope of the audit itself. That's the next slide. We said we provide an assurance that the financial statements are free from significant errors or material errors or distortion. That we give assurance on. But what we do not do, then linked to that, what we do not do as the office, we do not obviously guarantee or give assurance on the completeness or the accuracy of all information that is included in the financial statements. Meaning we do not give 100% assurance just because of the nature of the work that we do. Because obviously the work we do is informed by certain principles and the selections that we do, and we do not look at each and every single line item or transaction that would have gone through. So for that reason, we provide assurance on whether the financial statements are materially misstated or not, but not that they are 100% correct. So I think that is important to clarify on what we do. Then what we also spoke about, I said we report on the usefulness or reliability of the targets that the entity would have included in their APPs versus what then they include at the end. So to say that which you wanted to do and promised that you would do, whether that was done. So we do that, we report on that, but in doing that, we are not at the stage where we provide assurance or give assurance on whether service delivery would have been achieved or not. Ours is just to look at on the basis of what was promised, whether that was achieved or not, whether the information reported in the APR is reliable and useful. The next thing, the compliance with laws and legislation, we do that as part of the guiding laws and regulations that are in place and applicable to the entities. We look at that, the compliance thereof, but in doing that, again, we do not provide an assurance that each and every law and each and every section that is there, the department or the entity would have complied with. And there are a number of reasons why we don't give 100% assurance with the compliance with each and every provision or laws. Because again, what we do, before we do an audit, there is a process of scoping or deciding on the main provisions that the audit teams would be looking at, and our audit then will be focused and will be focused on those areas. And then the last thing that I want to talk about is identifying key controls and weaknesses in the key controls that are applicable, that are in the environment. But again, in doing that, what we don't then do, we do not go and look for fraud, if whether there is fraud or not, because we just do the procedures. But to the extent that there are indicators of fraud, because then the guidance that we use or the methodology, then it requires that certain steps be taken, that be reported. But we do not audit purely to identify whether there is fraud in the environment or not, because the audit process itself is not geared to attain to do that. So I think I've spoken about just that slide summarizes the types of audit that we do. In summary, that we audit the financial statements. From there, we give an opinion whether there are material misstatements or not. Compliance with laws and regulations, at this stage, there, if there are issues, if there are findings, if there are deviations, there we report, we include in our audit report those provisions that would have not been complied with. And then same thing with the audit of predetermined objectives, there we include issues or non-compliance or deviations that would have been identified during the audit process. So, and I've spoken to the discretionary audit where in most instances where, for example, we identify certain things in the audit environment that requires maybe an investigation, that is something that we can do, but as a discretionary audit which would have to be approved by the Auditor General. And the special audit, I've spoken about those two, performance audit as well as factual findings. Factual findings, those are areas where if there are certain things that management maybe want AG to look at, and some of the examples that are prevalent in the environment include, for example, if especially those entities that borrow money, in most instances before they borrow, there are certain procedures that would have to be ticked off and certain reports that must be signed that the lenders or the funders require before they can release money. So those are some of the things that we do in the environment because we are in the space and there is a report required from the Auditor General. In most instances, those are types of factual findings that we look at, or in some instances we would be asked to come in and look at, for example, the grants, to say if there was money given to an entity to do certain things. In some instances, we may be asked to come in and look specifically on that and report on that. So those things would fall under the factual findings because what we go in the environment and look at what was required on the basis of what was required and agreed, and we report on whether we found issues or not. So I just wanted to clarify the special audits, especially that part that talks to factual findings. Okay. Then the next part talks to the types of audit outcomes that we issue. After we have audited, after we've gone into the environment, we've audited, then there are five different outcomes that could result from that audit process. The first one is what is now known or termed as the clean audit outcome. So that is an outcome where we go in, we audit, and we find no significant deviation or distortion or material misstatements in the financial statement, so we can tick that box. In the audit of compliance, we say we've audited compliance and we also find no significant non-compliance issues. If you can tick that box as well, then the third part on the three areas that we need to audit, the audit of performance information, where we say that which you promised to do in the APPs and reported, we found it to be useful and consistent, and we tick all those boxes. In that instance, then we issue a technically, we say that is financially unqualified with no findings, so which is now termed clean audit. I'm just mentioning financially unqualified with no findings, because then you'll see the linkages between that and the next audit outcome, which is financially unqualified now with findings. So on this one, basically we're saying, after having audited the financial statements, we are comfortable that there are no issues, significant issues, let me put it that way. If we are comfortable that there are no significant issues, then we look at the other three areas, other two areas. On compliance, you say either on compliance with laws and regulations, if we picked up something, or under compliance with laws and regulations, or in performance information, in auditing performance information, if we find issues in those two areas, then that audit, the audit outcome will fall within that category, financially unqualified with findings. As I said, the report, we issue an opinion plus findings that we identify in the audit process under the audit of performance information and compliance. So those findings, that's what we are referring to in here. So then the next category, or in fact for the next three categories, then it means when we go in and audit financial statements, we then pick up issues that are material, depending on the nature of those issues, whether they are now too material or not. But if we find, we audit financial statements, we find that there are issues, then there we are going to issue a qualified opinion. That's the audit. So sometimes I think it's important, because these terms, it seems like they tend to confuse some people in out there in the environment, to say, but when you come and audit and you find nothing, you're saying I'm qualified, or you find issues, you're saying I'm qualified, but when you don't find issues, you're saying I am unqualified. So that's the terminology that is in there. So in this area, this talks to now the evidence that we find in the environment as it relates to the financial statements, the preparation of financial statements, and how they keep the records. So if we find material issues, then that's when we will issue a qualified audit opinion. Then the next category, an adverse opinion. Adverse audit opinion, that's when we do get financial statements. Again, there are material issues that we identify in the set of financial statements that are submitted to us. If that is the case, and in doing that, then you find that there are just so many problems in the financial statements that we cannot issue an opinion that we issue when we issue a qualified, because a qualified opinion, we're basically saying we've looked at the set of the credibility of the financial statements that you have submitted to us. In the main, they make sense except for one or two things, and we mention those things where we identify significant misstatements. So, but in this instance, when we decide to issue an adverse, we're basically saying we've received your set of the financial statements, we've audited them, but the things that we have identified here, they are just so many, or they are just so significant that it will be inappropriate for us to say they are fine except for certain things. Here we just disagree. These ones are not fine. So that's an adverse, and the difference between the two, the qualified and an adverse. And then the last one, the disclaimer. So this is an area where we get the financial statements, but when we request information, things are just so bad that the CERT is prepared and submitted to us, but there isn't any credible information submitted to us to validate the financial statements that are submitted. So in that instance, we say, thank you very much, you've received your financial statements, but on the basis that you are not able to help us help you by giving us credible information so that we can test check that against the financial statements, here we're just going to report and say we were not able to express an opinion here because there was just nothing for us to evaluate other than the financial statements that you gave us. So that's those are the five audit outcomes. So then the next slide, slightly related to the previous one, related to the one that I've spoken to now, to say when we are looking at the financial statements, just financial statements alone, excluding the two areas that we need to focus on as well, which is compliance and performance audit of performance information. So those are four types of audit opinions that one can get. The best one that one can get is an unqualified audit opinion. That opinion of which we've spoken, which I've spoken to say we've looked at the financial statements and they represent, they give a true reflection, a true and fair view of what happened in your environment insofar as the financial accounting and reporting is concerned. So then the qualified one, I think I have spent some time on that one, to say you've got a framework that you need to comply with in preparing your set of financial statements, but there were certain deviations that we noted when we audited, and we believe that in the main you complied with the framework and what is expected of you, except for those few things, just on the audit opinions, the financial statements. And the disclaimer and adverse, we've spoken to that one. Disclaimer, that's when we don't have anything to look at to evaluate financial statements. And then, as well as the last one, an adverse, where we said we've received the financial statements and we've also received the information which is seeking or trying to support it, but we do not see how those things support the financials or the numbers that are presented. Those are four types of the audit opinion. Then the last slide on the things that I am going to cover, it's just a clean audit, again emphasizing to say, what is this clean audit? How does one get a clean audit? I think we've spoken to that, to say the financial statements themselves will have to be free from material misstatements or significant errors. If they don't have that, plus we find nothing material on compliance with laws and regulations, and as well as when we look at your performance information, there aren't significant or issues as well. So if those three things are there, then we say that we're given a clean audit opinion. So that's from a high level and the background, that's what I wanted to cover. The next part is going to talk to some of the things that we've seen in the environment and the trends, as well as some of the numbers that we've seen, as they also equally apply to this portfolio as well. But for that, I'll leave it to Tinswa.
All right. Thank you very much. I will now proceed with the presentation. This slide, the current slide projected, is projecting the audit outcomes over the past 10 years, just to empower you with how the picture has been like, not necessarily in this portfolio, but throughout all the audits that we have been doing over the past 10 years. So I'll just start by explaining the color codes so that going forward we are on the same page. Green, in line with what the DBE was saying, if you see green, that means such auditees received a clean audit or unqualified with no findings. Yellow will relate to auditees that received unqualified audit opinion but with findings, either on compliance and performance information or on both. And then purple will relate to auditees that received a qualification, meaning there were few elements of the financial statements that were not prepared in line with the accounting framework. And then I think this is pink. that will relate to adverse, where we are saying majority of the things, even though you gave us the financial statement, were not prepared in line with the framework. And then red will be disclaimer, where the financial statements that we were given for such entities were not substantiated, so there were no evidence to support them. And then if it's blue, that will mean such audits for some reason are outstanding. So without going into each and every year, you can already see with the picture that majority of the auditees are sitting in the category of receiving unqualified audit opinion with findings on compliance and performance information. So performance information remains a more problematic area, as well as compliance, and we'll see with the pictures that are coming in the next slide. But this slide was reflecting on the audit outcomes in relation to the national and provincial government. Then if we proceed to the next slide, this is a reflection of the same audit outcome up until 2017-18 in relation to local governments, the municipalities and their municipal entities. And you can also see that even this picture shows most of the auditees are sitting in the yellow category of unqualified with findings on compliance and AOPO. And maybe one thing to note on this one is the clean audits started by increasing over time, but it also shows to be decreasing again, but that's in relation with the local government. If we move to the next slide, based on the historic information as well, based on the audits that we have performed over the past 10 years, another thing when it comes to non-compliance that we reflect on is irregular expenditure. It's also fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It's also unauthorized expenditure. Before I talk to the graph, I would like to just explain what irregular expenditure is, just to make sure that we are on the same page. So irregular expenditure is expenditure that has been incurred where in the process of buying goods and services for such a department or an entity, laws and regulations were not adhered to. So some principles, maybe for supply chain management, were not adhered to when buying goods and services. So that will lead to irregular expenditure. Okay, so this picture here, you can see for when you compare local government, which is a blue graph, to national and provincial government, the extent of irregular expenditure is much higher, meaning most of the budget that was spent in the national and provincial department would have been spent where some of the laws and regulations were not followed in the process of getting goods and services. So one thing I want to clarify is irregular expenditure does not mean goods and services were not received. They were received, it's just that some rules and regulations were broken in the process of receiving such. Okay. Then if we move to the next picture, also showing historic information on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The definition of fruitless and wasteful expenditure is saying you have incurred costs or you have spent money on certain things that could have been avoided, or you have spent money on certain things that were in vain, or you've spent money on something that we can't point to and say this is what you spent the money on. I'll give you an example. If you enter into a contract with a supplier that they are going to provide maybe a building for your client department for a particular period, and you need to pay the lease amount every 30 days. And in that very same contract, they say, if you don't pay within 30 days, we're going to charge you interest. Had you made sure that you have controls in place to pay within the 30 days, you were not going to incur the extra interest. But because you have been lenient in your processes, you end up incurring costs that you could have avoided, which is interest. So also another example will be in an individual basis, just so we are on the same page about fruitless, where you don't file for your tax return, and then it so happened that in that year you actually owed SARS had you filed your tax return. SARS will continue to charge interest on that money that you should have paid when you filed the tax return, and they will actually charge penalties on it being paid late. So the principle of fruitless and wasteful says, had you filed your tax return on time, you could have avoided interest that was charged on that tax return, and you would not have been in a position where you are now charged with penalties on that tax return. So this picture then, with that understanding, is showing the extent of fruitless and wasteful expenditure that has been incurred by all the auditees that we audit in the national and provincial as well as in local government, with national and department showing a much more higher extent of fruitless and wasteful expenditure that has been incurred in the past. And then the next graph or slide, this one talks to unauthorized expenditure. So unauthorized expenditure says, as a department, you are given a vote or a budget for a certain purpose. You are expected to use that money for that particular vote. So if it so happened that instead of doing what you were supposed to do in terms of your mandate when you were given that money, you went and you spent money on something else. So that will be unauthorized expenditure in line with the national departments and the provincial departments, and also with local government. And then with entities, because we also have public entities, unauthorized expenditure will be you spent more than what the budget had asked you to spend on. So the definition is quite different, but it's still talking to unauthorized expenditure. To say we've given you a budget of so much, but you went and you spent more than that. So that will be unauthorized expenditure. And then this one, out of the other two paragraphs, slides that we went through, this is the only one that shows a more extent or a bigger amount of unauthorized expenditure in local government than in the national department. Okay, and then the next slide, this is reflecting now on unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, and fruitless, and the extent to where the money spent on these types of expenditure was either recovered from the responsible parties, or such unauthorized or irregular or fruitless and wasteful expenditure was condoned or authorized or approved, or it was written off afterwards, or it has not been dealt with. So
the purpose of this slide, it is to show a picture of whether consequence management is it working, because once irregular expenditure has been incurred, there need to be other steps that are taken by the accounting authority and accounting officers to either recover the money or understand why such things have happened. So this picture here is trying to show that picture to say to what extent are the, if there is any consequence management taking place in the audits, are those effective. So you'll see red there is indicating that majority of irregular expenditure, as you can see on the first block of the graph, has not been dealt with. So that is 89% in all audits that we audit as Auditor General. And then for unauthorized, it will be about 81% that has not been dealt with. And then for fruitless and wasteful, it will be about 80% that has not been dealt with. But the one message that I think one can take from this slide is because of the red picture of the graph, it does show that there is an opportunity to improve on consequence management in the national, provincial, and also local. Okay, then in all our reports, we don't only show the historic outcomes, we also reflect on what we think could be the areas that should be improved to try and move everyone from the red and yellow to the green category. So in most cases, over the years, in all the audits that we audit, we found slow response or no response to our recommendation being one of the biggest challenges that hinder the audits from improving their audit outcomes or from receiving a clean audit outcome. Another problem that we've picked up over the past when analyzing all the issues that are found in our audits will be instability or vacancies, or having people with the right competencies to be able to execute the work and produce annual financial statements that are credible and annual performance information that is also credible, and ensure that such people are aware of how, what laws and regulations need to be followed and they are monitoring them. Okay, and then the last one, which can also be evident from the previous slide, is inadequate consequences. Saying things are happening, but nothing much is being done to deal with all the issues that are done that should not be done. And because of that, you will continue to see the same result over time, because there isn't enough or sufficient consequence management to hold people accountable. So that's where accountability comes in. Okay. The next slide. This slide is just giving the number to all the four slides or five slides that we went through on over the audit outcomes over 10 years to say, if you look at last year, as it 2017-18 audit outcomes, about 952 audits on regulatory audits were completed, and we issued a consolidated PFMA general report that summarizes for each province what the outcomes are. We also issue one for municipalities called the MFMA general report that also summarizes for each province and included the assessment of the implementation of initiatives linked to the medium-term strategic framework. So I think this would even have been nicer to start with on the other slides for the before you see the graph, just to give the number in terms of where we got all those colors of yellow and green and so forth. Okay, this slide, it reflects on, as the DBE has indicated, that we enable oversight and accountability through our audit. So this is just to explain maybe and also to demonstrate what processes do we go about in the audits, and also how is that linked to the role of the portfolio committee that enables oversight. So each and every year, after the audit has been completed, we do what we call the status of records review with the accounting officers and authorities, where we look at key focus areas to see if there's any risks that might maybe hinder the auditee from improving on their audit outcome, or even lead to the auditee's audit outcome regressing. So we'll look at certain things that maybe might be affecting their compliance, as it's one of the key areas, or their financial health in terms of how money is used, or the human resources in terms of capacitating the department, if it's a department or an entity, making sure that we assess the vacancy level in the department and be able to warn the accounting officer or authority if such things might end up causing the audit outcomes into the following year regressing or not. So we share such things so that, and then over and above, join with that is the sessions that we have with the portfolio committee, where we share the audit outcomes and we share our findings and we share our recommendations to be able to empower the audit committee to invite people to come and account, the executive to come and account, or the department to come and account and see what loopholes are there that can be closed. So that is the process that we also follow to enable oversight. Okay, I think this slide as well is clarifying or emphasizing on the previous slide that I was explaining, to say the process actually starts from where the annual performance report plans are prepared by the department, and they need to be submitted to the portfolio committee for approval. So we usually have a session where we capacitate the portfolio committee as well before the annual performance plans are tabled, to say areas such as this, if you look at the usefulness that my board spoke about, so there's two criteria that we usually express a conclusion on, to say, are the annual performance report useful or reliable? So we'll look at certain things that are reflected in the submitted APR annual performance plan and be able to empower the portfolio committee so that they are able to know what to be in the lookout for. For instance, we'll break down what it will mean for an annual performance report to have targets that are useful, and for the annual performance report to have information that has been reported in that is reliable, so that before they approve, they also play their role even better. And then the other one about sharing the audit outcomes, I have already reflected on in the previous one, and the steps that then follows after that, which will be briefing for clarity, where the audit the auditee or the department will come and reflect on the audit outcomes and what they have done and what has not been done and account, and that's how we map our mission statement of enabling oversight and accountability. Okay, the next slide then talks specifically to the role of the portfolio committee, to say the committee will gather information by examining reports, getting briefings, and holding hearings. The committee will then, from all those gathering information and hearings, make findings or formulate recommendations and issue a report. Such a report will then be adopted or sent in the legislature to adopt, and then the executive will then be called to come and account in certain instances that are areas that the committee is worried about in terms of reflection on the performance of the portfolio, and then there will be recommendations or resolution to then close any loopholes that are identified from such a process. So this slide is reflecting on your role as the new portfolio committee as well, with what is going to happen from now when the audit outcomes are tabled and what should happen going forward. Okay, so apart from the historic information that I have shared so far, we also felt we should also empower you a bit on the Public Audit Act amendment, just to explain on a high level what these amendments are about, so that if you better understand, then you'll be able to exercise your role even better with understanding of what the implication is going to be on the performance of the portfolio that you are responsible for. Okay, so this slide is explaining the key thing that is in the new amendment for the Public Audit Act, where we are saying we are going to deal with material irregularities. And then maybe before I go through the definition, in the past when you present the graph about irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, the question you will get is, what did you do as the AG? So what happens after that? So all those questions have then triggered the expansion in our Act to be able to deal with some of the regularities. So we start with the what happened with technology. Connected. Okay. So we start by explaining what this material, obviously taking the principle that the DBE has explained to say whenever we audit, there are principles and prescripts that we follow, and we can't look at everything 100%. So even with material irregularities, we can't look at all irregularities. We have to come to a point where we are saying, okay, we'll look at all material irregularities. So we start by explaining what material irregularity is, which is a non-compliance with or contravention of legislation. It's also fraud, it's theft, or a breach of fiduciary duty, which would have been identified when we are performing the audit, and it's likely to result in a material financial loss or the misuse or loss of material public resources, or will substantially harm or will cause substantial harm to a public sector institution or the general public. So when we're talking about material irregularity, we'll be talking about this process. However, you will agree when you look at the number of audits we are responsible for from the other slide, 952 audits, and this being a new role that has been expanded to us, we need to make sure that it is exercised properly, and we have resources that are capacitated, that are trained to be able to do their job. So in introducing that concept, a resolution was then made to say we will implement it in a phased-in approach. So during the 2018-19 financial year, it was then agreed with COEX that we will implement the PAA amendment on the 16 audits for this current financial year that we are busy with. And there were criteria that were set to implement the PA8 amendment in that. So such results are still underway, and then once we have evaluated the results, then going forward it will pave the way and also inform us in terms of how do we move forward going forward. But it can be assumed for now that because the PAA has become effective, it will apply to all the audits until you are informed otherwise. So I just want to go back to this slide just to explain a bit more in terms of how we are going to deal with this material irregularity. So the new powers means we can actually refer a material irregularity to relevant bodies for further investigation, or we can do the investigation ourselves if it doesn't need a specific or a speciality type of investigation to investigate on such irregularity. This power as well also means we can take binding remedial action for failure to implement the AG's recommendation for material irregularities identified. So there is going to be a process where through the audit we will identify non-compliances that meets the definition of a material irregularity, meaning it is material and it's a non-compliance that is likely to result in financial loss or that has resulted in financial loss. And we will then issue that or communicate that to the accounting officer and accounting authority with certain recommendations that needs to happen for a specific period of time. Should that not happen, we can take binding remedial actions on failure to implement those recommendations. Another one is we can actually also issue a certificate of debt, because we talk about financial loss, for failure to implement the remedial action if financial loss was involved. Okay, so that's what I wanted to just explain what this will mean going forward in terms of our roles. Okay. And then if we proceed then with the role of oversight being also your role as the portfolio committee, it will be important for you to use the information that will be in the audit report, where we will reflect on any material irregularities that have been identified, and we'll also outline the process that was followed, whether the recommendations were implemented or not, that when you call the responsible parties, you are then able to exercise your role even better to hold those that are responsible for taking remedial action to account. Yeah, I think that is then the end of our presentation.
Thank you for such a clear presentation. I think in many of us, at least we now understand what Auditor General South Africa is doing in the departments, entities, and municipalities, and all that. Honorable members, any comments, questions on the presentation?
I think let me know all those that have raised their hands. You will be the first one, number 3, number 4, and number 5. In that order.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much for the presentation. I find it quite enlightening. Do you have specific audit findings that you could provide to us for specific portfolios, or would that have to be sent through the either the chair or the secretary of that specific portfolio? Where would we go to get that? Do we go directly to you, or do we go through our own structures? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Well, thank you very much, Auditor General, for the information that you have actually given us. It is indeed a valuable information that you have given us. Well, I heard that when you started that you were not going to give us a audit outcome. Well, I just want to check as to when you say that who will give us the outcome. I want to be specific, not about any other department or any sphere of government, about us as this particular portfolio. Is there a time where we are going to get an auditor outcome? Because I could hear and I realized how you were making this presentation, that how we are being capacitated. So I'm eager to know what is it that is our outcome in this particular department. And lastly, well, I also realized that you were saying that you don't deal with issues of fraud. But I could also share that you can only deal with fraud if it is at a certain level. Now, I just want to check and say that it means that when you discover a minor fraud, it means that you turn a blind eye simply because you are not actually going to be dealing with fraud. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable
Francis
Calvin.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to echo the previous sentiments in terms of the upcoming report. It is surely eye-opener once more, and really hoping that it will assist us in performing our responsibility better. Chair, when I look at, I'm not going to echo the previous sentiments that were raised in terms of the questions that I wanted to pose, but when I look in at on page 9 in terms of the outstanding audit, I've seen that for a number of years there hasn't been an indication of any outstanding audits. Then when looking at 16-17, there's 1%, and going to 17-18, there's suddenly 9% of outstanding audits. Can you give us an indication of what are you doing in terms of those audits, that data? Do you have a time frame wherein you're handling it, or what's happening in terms of that to deal with that data? And then when we are looking at the high level of irregular, fruitless and wasteful and unauthorized expenditure, are you recommending any consequence management measures to the different departments, or what is your role in terms of remedying that situation? And if you are recommending consequence management measures, do you have some kind of special intervention when dealing with the different departments in terms of a plan, special plans that you are working hand in hand with those departments on a quarterly basis to ensure that they are indeed implementing those measures that you are recommending? And if you are doing that, what are your response if they are not adhering to the measures that you are proposing to them? Then when you welcoming the Public Audit Act, because if we look at the number of years and the problems that arose during audits, this is the kind of act that I assume would assist you. But yet again, we don't want to have something in place that's supposed to relieve you or remedy the situation, but it's not yielding the effective results. With that, I mean that we have wonderful legislation in place, everything is in place, but the main problem is compliance and enforcing compliance. So what do you have in place to ensure that there is indeed enforcement of compliance in terms of this act? You are mentioning that you're issuing certificate of debt. What's happening afterwards to ensure that they comply to their recommendations? Thank you very much, Jen.
Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the detailed. You know, every time when you sit for an induction of from the ages of us, you always learn something new. Chair, I'm looking at this graphs, page 11, page 12, page 13, and one needs to be a bit worried, especially when it comes to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, especially in the local government. And now there is this amendment that has been made pertaining the audit as to what's going to happen. But the reality is at local government, because I was serving there, is that you sit on the MPEC, you bring people forward to come and account, and then things are written off. And they can't even comply with the recommendations that are there. So I'm also hoping that this new amendment is going to assist in that, because when you go to the graph of how many were retrieved, how much money was retrieved on page 14, and then I was going to ask a question about intervention, but you've already clarified that on intervention. But now my question is, how are you going to go about, because we know that specifically with local government, there are specific municipalities that are totally justifying. There's no improvement in them year in, year out. Do you have a specific target as to this is where we are going to start with this, or are you going to do the amendment across all of the departments, all of the municipalities, or do you have a target to say, look here, we've got a crisis here, let's implement this thing here? Because we've been giving these municipalities or departments chances for so long. So let's start here and show them that we are serious, because we come, we intervene, still there is no improvement. So do you have a specific target on how you are going to deal and with the amendment of the Act? Thank you.
Honorable Van Staden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've seen some disturbing figures in my life, but this is more disturbing than I've ever saw. Just a few questions, maybe there's some answers, maybe there's not. Please bear with me, I forgot my reading glasses this morning at home, so I'm a bit struggling. On page 9 and 10 on that slide, do we know who these departments and municipalities are? Do they have this information? And I just want to go to page, and then on page 11, the national and provincial government is supposed to set an example for local government. And if you look at these figures, it's a lot of money which is going down the drain somewhere, somehow. And that's why local government is following in the same footsteps, because the example is not set exactly straight up on national provincial government. I just want to know, what are you guys' turnaround plan and to combat these measures, these irregular expenditures? Then I just want to go to, just I've made some notes here, page 14. All those outstanding money, what is going to be done to recover that outstanding money, and at what stage will it be dealt with? If I can just get that answer there. And then on page 15, when you see words like blatant disregarded, unethical behavior, no consequences, my point is, how will the law be enforced to stop these kind of activities? It's rather disturbing to see something like that. It's like the previous member said, it looks like someone is doing something, but
at the end of the day, it looks like she's just get a slap on the wrist and nothing's happening. So my question is, how will the law eventually be enforced to stop these kind of things on all levels of government? Because this country cannot go on like this. We are losing billions and trillions of money each financial year down the drain, which could have been used to uplift poor people, to build houses, to put infrastructure in place. You see where I'm getting at. So that's just a few answers I want. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honourable Copan.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the insightful presentation this morning. Chair, according to the presentation, it was said that about 952 audits were completed. Did you have a specific target? Was it your target, or what was it? And I'm sure now with the new public audit amendment, there's going to be more work to be done. So my question is, do you have a capacity as AG? Are you going to employ more people to assist you? And Chair, one thing that I did when I was listening to the presentation, it is clear that especially in our municipalities, there's problem. The Free State where I come from, there's a municipality that was established in 2002. Since its establishment, they've been receiving the disclaimer. So, and the municipality is being under administration, but nothing is changing. So in that situation, what do you do? Because we have asked for the municipality to be dissolved, but the root causes, as you said here in page 15, they are clearly all of them, they were involved with many municipalities. So, you know, every time we listen about what the AG has said, but nothing has been done. So with this new amendment, there was really going to be enforcement into places, because that's what is happening on a daily basis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Kopane. Just a few comments from me. The outcomes of national and provincial versus local government, is it maybe they're using different sets of regulations and rules? You talk of PFMA here, you talk of MFMA. You remember when the municipalities were started, they were all using PFMA. The MFMA came into being in 2006, local government. That's when the MFMA came into being. The fact that local government, I may say, is over-regulated for everything there. I want to check then on the issue of unauthorized expenditure. Unauthorized expenditure, page 14. If you look at local government versus the provincial and the national government, I want to check here, are they using the same sets of regulations for expenditure? And then when you audit, you also use those sets. Because it is really, really worrisome. I remember local government is the one that is there on the ground. It is the one that is there to provide services for ordinary people. So if you have such unauthorized expenditure, you may say the future is very bleak for ordinary people that are out there, if there is such huge amount that are being said, it's unauthorized expenditure. So I just want to check him now on that one. But on this one, on the slides that were indicating the irregular expenditure, the last one that reflects on 60 million, the one 90 million, I want to check, is it the years? The first one, maybe you say 2016, 2017, and the other one,
89%, 81%, 80%. Are we comparing years on that one? Let's also appreciate that though it's not significant, there is money being recovered. It can't be all going down the drain or what. When you say that, much as we know that you have not yet started implementing the new amendment, I just want to check, you would refer those irregularities to the relevant public bodies for further investigation. What are we referring to? Maybe SIU, all those bodies. Thank you.
I just want to find out from the AG. Normally the province will say that we've got clean audit, but sometimes there will remain problems of challenges somewhere of service delivery. So how does the clean audit sometimes being, what can I say?
Service delivery.
Yeah. Can you measure the clean audit versus the service delivery or the impact of life generally to improve here? Yes.
Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I will try and address the questions that I've noted. If I miss anything, I rely on my colleague to assist with that. And the first question was on whether there are findings that we can share at a later stage. I think so. In terms of the process, we started like now with the capacity building, sharing the basics on what we are about and what we do, and also through the questions and answer session, try and gauge what it is that the committee members are worried about and make sure that we factor and take that into account when we come back next time. So the process that is currently underway, insofar as this portfolio is concerned, not all ODTs within this portfolio have been finalized. I mean, the audit process has been finalized. So at this stage, there is one ODT where we are still auditing. But in terms of the process, we will come back in October with the specific. It will be the same. This team again that will share the findings, the recommendations that we issued, and clarify any specific issues that you might have or questions or clarity that you might, or things that you might want us to clarify. So I hope that covers the question. So we will share that. Maybe not today, but when we come back in October with the specific, the BRRR and everything else that we deal with at that stage. So the detailed findings and the briefing on how the audit went and the findings and all those things. That's what we're going to share when we come back in October. Okay. So, Honorable Matebula, the question, was building up from the member's question to say when will that happen. In October, when we come back, we'll come back with the specifics on the findings and the issues. You also asked a question on fraud to say sometimes I can't remember to say, or whether we turn a blind eye on fraud when if things are small. So just in terms of the process, when we audit and when we identify the indicators or things that might indicate that there is fraud, we do not investigate, but we need to respond to that. So to the extent that what we've picked up might be related to the report that we need to issue, might be related to the numbers that we are auditing. We need to clarify and identify what that means in terms of the audit opinion that we are going to issue. But insofar as identifying the root causes and what caused that, whether that is actually fraud or not, because when we do the audit, we deal with it, the indicators, to say, there, this is what we've picked up. If there are indicators or suspicions of fraud, what we are then, in terms of the standard required to do, we need to escalate or report that to management. To the extent that management might be involved in such allegations or indicators that we might have picked up, then we report that to the line above that, which will be the executive authority. So that's how we deal with such indicators. So it's not a case of us saying this one is small, we're going to turn a blind eye. As long as there are indicators of fraud in the environment, not fraud, indicators of fraud, we need to respond to that, to the extent that those things do not, to make sure that those things do not distort or at least reflect negatively on the opinion that we're going to be issuing. So that's how we deal with fraud or fraud. There was a question on what outstanding audits. In the recent past, we've started taking back a number of big Schedule 2 audits, and some of the outstanding audits fall within that category. For example, if you talk about SAA, for example, as an example. So those are mostly the big Schedule 2 audits that are outstanding. So that part one. And part two, in some instances, we'll find that in the audit, in the process of auditing, there will be certain things that need to be dealt with to such an extent that the audit reporting period is missed, so to speak. But for the purposes of reporting, because we said for both PFMA and MFMA, we issue a document called the General Report. So at the time of us finalizing that report, we need to have a cutoff of some sort and say, if, because most of these audits that you are seeing there, at subsequent to that, they would have been finalized. But for the purposes of us reporting here and generating that the general report document, we have to cut off and say, here we need to report, and these are the audits that have been finalized. So that's what that blue that number talks. Then there was one on, so on irregular expenditure, fruitless and all those things. So what we do on an annual basis, we go in and audit, identify those things, we report them, we require auditees to disclose. And as part of the recommendations, then our recommendations are not far off from what the legislation requires. The legislation requires that such things be investigated. Once you have investigated, you decide, you determine whether you need to recover, you decide whether you need to determine whether these things or the irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful, whether that it was a mere non-compliance but goods were received, and whether that can be condoned. That's the process that we recommend that the auditees put in place. But in the process, and that I think that's what you've seen in there, to say that process of investigation, because for us, we say the financial statements and the numbers therein will not be complete, and we won't just allow auditees to take off such numbers without investigation. So what that has done is that as we report annually, the number is growing, because we are saying as long as you have not complied with what the legislation requires of you as a department or as an auditee, we will have a problem if you take that out of that. So that's why you're seeing the number increasing. But in saying that, it doesn't mean that we're saying it's not a valid or it's not a valid irregular expenditure or fruitless and wasteful. And we are just saying make sure that that is investigated, that is determined, established the extent of that before you take that out or you write that off. Okay, so the new amendments in terms of local government, maybe because there were a couple of questions that I think touched on the PAA. I just need to deal with that in that holistic manner. To say, when we looked at, firstly, how we are implementing the amendments, is that it's a massive task that we that the legislation requires us to implement or take into account. One, so what we've done is that we've looked at the definition, and the definition looks at the number of things. But we're saying in implementing this, we are not looking at the entire definition. So we've broken these things into pilots. So for PFMA, for the cycle that we are coming from, we looked at 16 oddities, just 16 oddities, depending on the nature of the audit outcomes that they have received in the past, depending on the quantum of irregular expenditure that is there, and I can't remember the third one, but on the basis of that criteria, we identified 16. In that 16, we try to apply now the definition of this material irregularity. So that's what we're doing. Same thing with MFMA. MFMA, on the basis of the same criteria, there are nine municipalities. There are nine municipalities that we are going to be doing the same exercise. So linked to that, there was a question that was asked to say, how are we then going to implement? Are we going full implementation next year, or it's going to be piecemeal as well? I think we are clear in terms of the definition that next year, for the ones that we've, on the ODTs that where we piloted this year, maybe we'll be extending to the other aspects of the definition. But as to whether we are implementing across, that will be informed by the outcome of the pilot. So we still need to analyze the outcome of the pilot in PFMA. In MFMA, we've just started. So that has not even started. So that's how we're going to implement the PAA. So 952 audits, whether that is our target or not. Our target, we want to issue audit reports on each and every ODT that is required to submit financial statements in terms of the legislation. But in this instance, 952, that would, like I explained a bit earlier, that this is not our target, but this is what we would have covered for 17-18 for the purposes of us finalizing the slides and the general report. So on capacity to implement, sorry, thanks, thank you. So from the capacity aspect, and the reason why we are piloting is exactly that we wanted to identify, do the analysis of the outcome of the pilot. On the basis of that, then we establish whether we will have enough capacity to implement across. But at the same time, we do not want to be reckless in implementing what the legislation requires. There was a question to say in UIFW that unauthorized, fruitless and wasteful, to say some of the things are just written off. I think it came from the member. But in terms of the process, That's not what we encourage. In fact, in terms of what happens in the environment is that before certain things are written off or irregular expenditure or unauthorized, certain processes ought to have been followed. If you are in the MFMA space, for example, like you're talking about local government, is that there are certain legislation or provisions in the MFMA that says you need to have investigated, established whether you need to recover or not. Only after that process has happened, then you can recommend to council whether for that irregular expenditure to be written off or not. Now, from an audit process point of view, if those steps are not done, and it has happened in a number of audits, if those steps are not done, we say we're dealing with audit evidence. We have not seen the audit evidence that that proves that you followed what a particular provision, in that instance would be your 32, says it requires you to do 1, 2, 3, 4. To the extent that you have not done that, we see your financial statements as distorted because you have excluded the numbers that you are not supposed to exclude. So that's what we do from an audit process point of view. Nine and ten, I can't remember. Do we know what, or do we know the departments? Nine and ten. We do know who the departments or the auditees are under 9 and 10, but we do not have that list here. Usually when we finalize these slides and the general report, there will be annexures accompanying these things, and we also do that per portfolio. When we come back here in October, we will have the names of the auditees, but specifically for this portfolio, Public Works portfolio. Deal with that. 14, slide 14, say outstanding money. I think I've briefly touched on what is in slide 14. The question or comment was that it seems like there is outstanding monies that have not been recovered. But what that slide is seeking to do, on that slide we're just saying we've reported these irregular expenditures over the years, and the departments or the auditees were supposed to go out and investigate, upon investigating, decide whether they need now to recover or not, because investigation will either say, yeah, you need to recover, or not, you don't have to recover because of certain reasons. We just say that 172, that big chunk, is where the auditees have not gone back to do that investigation so that there can be clarity on what was the cause of that irregular expenditure. So how will we be enforced? Okay, linked to that, I think Chairperson, you wanted to find out, still on slide 14, whether these are the years. So here we're breaking down three categories of this expenditure. The first bar talks to irregular expenditure, then the second one, that's unauthorized. And the third one, we're talking, that talks to fruitless and wasteful, not, yeah. But the numbers are cumulative. Yeah. So we didn't just deal with one year. So insofar as consequence management, what we do, we come in, we audit, we report irregular expenditure. Then the following year, then there is a provision, a provision in legislation that requires us to check whether management implemented or investigated or did what we had recommended in terms of what the legislation requires. So if we find that That was not done. Unfortunately, at this stage, then we required them to report that specific paragraph, or yes, paragraph in the report, to say in terms of the legislation, you are required to have at least investigated this. If you have not done that, then in the audit report we'll report a paragraph that relates to consequence management, to say the accounting officer did not do 1, 2, 3, 4. That's how we deal with it, because at this stage we do not have powers to force people to do those things. We can only recommend and try and persuade through conversations and engagements and ask them to implement. Yeah. Okay. Service delivery versus clean audits. At this stage, the work that we do that may be somehow related to service delivery, but we don't do any work on service delivery per se. So we are not currently pronouncing on service delivery. So currently that's what I think was covered in slide 4. Currently what we do is saying, if you get a clean audit, that's an indication that you've got internal controls and processes in place for you to run your organization, your department, your ODT in the manner that is desirable and required. From there, you can focus on what people on the ground want, which is service delivered. But our clean audit does not equate to service delivery. I think I have tried to cover all the questions that I could remember.
I am the chair for now, for 2 minutes.
Oh, you? Oh. Chair, I think I have tried to answer all the questions, unless if I've missed any.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if I've missed your response in terms of what's happening after the certificate of death has been issued.
Oh, okay.
In terms of enforcement of compliance. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. So, maybe at a very high level, Chair, I can just outline what happens with this PAA and the enforcement thereof of this thing. So we say we're phasing in this definition. So we go in order to identify, say, non-compliance, because for now we're focusing on non-compliance. So if we identify non-compliance, and then that non-compliance leads to, as an example, leads to an irregular expenditure. So the mere fact that it led to an irregular expenditure does not automatically trigger the recovery, because then once that is done, we are then required to establish whether there was financial loss in that process. Once we have established that, which is now different from irregular expenditure would have been reported in the audit report in any case, but now in this instance, you're saying I've went a step further to establish whether there was a financial loss. Once you've established that there was a financial loss, you communicate, you give the accounting officer an opportunity to respond. We say, we give you 20 days to respond here and tell me what happened with that irregular or non-compliance which led to that financial loss. Then the accounting officer writes back, they've got 20 days, then they write back and say, I've looked at the same information that you have looked at and given to me. These are my responses. Then on the basis of that, we assess that and see whether we are satisfied. So one of two things will happen. Either we satisfy that they have actually implemented steps to make sure that they correct that, or they have not. Or if not, then we say we see the response, we appreciate the response, but you have not covered us in this instance. Then we give you an opportunity to come and make an oral representation. So if we are still not satisfied, then we move on to the next step. As part one, we say in the audit report, we're going to include a recommendation which is now enforceable, to say here's enforceable. You need to correct this in this manner. That's a recommendation going into the audit report. If then that again is not addressed, then we need to establish, but obviously before that, we need to establish whether it's something that, if we need to investigate this non-compliance, whether it's something that we can do or we need to give to other bodies that can do that better, because they specialize on that. We've got an agreement with about 9 public bodies that we can refer to. So once then that is done, then we decide, so we're saying nothing has actually happened. So it's either we issue a certificate of debt to the accounting officer to say, now you need to recover this. In recovery, we are not saying that the accounting officer as a person must pay, but we're saying the accounting officer is responsible. If there is someone who caused that, they must go and get the money from that person. So, but the actual collection, we issue that, the actual collection, we hand that over to Treasury. That's what we don't do. We issue that and we leave it at that. Someone else does the collection. So they have taken a long-winded way of answering the question, but I thought it would be important, Chair, just to explain from step one right up to the last.
We really appreciate such comments. They are shedding some light in some of the things that we didn't know about auditing process and even how the outcomes come about. Any more take, honorable members, but we can release them. Honorable, CM, sure.
Thanks, Chair. The apologies for arriving late. Thanks, Chair. Apologies for arriving late. Chair, through you, the explanation on irregular expenditure, if I captured it well, you said it does not necessarily mean that services were not provided. In relation to our portfolio committee, what could be the causes or what could be the contributing factors that will make the department to take such a route? I'm raising this so that one is empowered, such that when we see these things, we must understand that they do happen. There are circumstances probably beyond the control. Part of this capacity building is to empower us, I guess, so that we do oversight better. We have been voted to be here, and it was not on the basis of our skills and capabilities. You can then assume that probably, in fact it's not an assumption, we bring different skills, and we might not even have technical skills in relation to this portfolio that we belong to. How do you as AG assist us in making sure that the department brings APPs which are user friendly which will make our life easier to do our oversight. One was trying to look previously. It becomes difficult if you are not technical. And I can tell, I see that departments, they just bring some of these APPs, hide a lot of issues, put them in their operational plans, and the next thing will come here and fight with them and say, bring your operational plan, because from the oversight point of view, you find the APP naked. It's moving in seconds. The APP is about runs and cents. It should be able to quantify these runs and cents. But you move in between quantities and percentages. So I'm saying, I believe yourself, you are better placed because you have got particular skills which you can utilize. How can you assist us such that when you approve these APPs, it becomes easier for us to do our work? Thank you.
Over to
you. I'll leave this one because it's specific to the portfolio. I think you want specific, I think, pointed answers. I'll give this to the senior manager to quickly take.
Okay, in relation to the first one, of what will be the reasons for the department to incur irregular expenditure, I will not go into the specifics for this current year, but to give you an example, looking at the nature of services that are delivered by the department. Usually they are responsible for state funerals, for example, to provide movable assets during the arrangement of state events. So it might happen that because of the nature of that event, like a funeral you cannot plan beforehand, because of the nature and the timing that it needs to happen within a very short period of time, some of the supply chain management processes might be compromising the process just to get that state event happening. So that will be one of the examples that might lead to irregular expenditure. So meaning maybe one or two processes of supply chain might have been compromised because there was maybe a state funeral or another state event that needed to be delivered. So that will be an example. But when we come back in October, we'll have specifics of what we found this year when we were auditing in relation to irregular expenditure. And then the next question about the APPs. Usually, it's just that this year there were elections that happened. So usually in a year that is a normal year where there's no elections and stuff and our timelines are not disturbed, we usually have a session with the portfolio committee where we capacitate you in terms of the review that you are going to be doing on the annual performance plan to reflect on what we would have picked up in the previous year when it comes to usefulness. So for example, I like the example that you gave to say sometimes you find that when you go to the annual performance plan, critical information that is relevant to the mandate of the department might be missing. So from our criteria or procedures that we go through when addressing usefulness, we would have capacitated you to say, look at the five things. So these are the five things that you should be in the lookout for when you are reviewing that will give you comfort if you find them, that the plan has been crafted in the right manner that will make the auditor at the end of the day to deliver on a plan that is useful and to deliver on a plan and process that will give reliable information. So usually before the approval of the APPs, we usually give you such a session. And then even over and above, when we come back in October,
reflecting on the audit outcomes, we should be able to reflect on the entities and the department within the portfolio in terms of that space of performance information. How did they do? Are they receiving a clean audit, which will mean such an entity will not have any issues in relation to usefulness and reliability of the information? Or if there's none in the portfolio, then that will give you a picture of what is it that they are struggling with in terms of performance information. But yes, in short, we do have a session where we capacitate the portfolio committee with the principles of reviewing the APPs. Thank you.
Thank you again. I think Honorable Michelle is correct. Sometimes these thick documents, you find there's a lot of hidden information, and as such you can't see, well, no, there's something wrong there. But okay, I think you have assisted us today. We're looking forward to seeing you again in October, and that time you don't be general about capacity. We'll be going to specifics, and specifics that relate to the department that we are oversighting, hoping that also you also be true with audit outcomes that you have been currently, you are currently busy with now, the report. And even ourselves, when we ask questions, we'll be detailed and going straight to the point. Thank you again for your such an insightful presentation to us. It really has assisted us. Thank you. We'll take a 10-minute break, then we come back for our minutes. Thank you.
Salo.